Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda, and I'm very excited about our show today because I think you're going to really not only enjoy our guest, but be moved by our guest today. I have Emily Goudreau with me, and Emily is a former Playboy photographer, is now a child sexual abuse prevention educator and anti-pornography activist. She is a woman on a mission to stop the cycle of sexual trauma and open her eyes to the high price we're paying for our pornified culture. It's my pleasure to welcome Emily to our show today.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
Yes. So this is obviously an extremely important topic, but let's just dive in here and tell us a little bit about sort of the journey, fill in the gaps of this bio, and then tell us about the important work that you're doing today.
Yeah. So it feels like it was a whole nother life ago, but I used to be a commercial editorial photographer. So I worked for Rachel Ray, her and her husband, John Cusimano, have a recording label. So I worked for them. I've done stuff with Bill Gates and Bungie Studios. And I've been to 35 different countries doing documentary work. And in 2008, I mean, also, I want to interject in there quite a bit of fashion work, which is important to the story. In 2008, the economy bombs, as we all know. And the first thing that gets cut in most companies that are paying a lot for marketing is the marketing department, which includes photography. So I got a call from Playboy during that period of time, and they're like, we're going to fly you out and you're going to do this shoot. I'm like, you're going to pay me. Good. Let's go. And it's a great, you know, I was all about collecting big names on my resume, clients I had worked for. And it's funny because a lot of people want to hear this dramatic story that this some crazy thing happened at Playboy that made me go, this is so horrible, I can't be a part of it. But it's not entirely that way. But I did, I worked for them, and I did have a little bit of a moment where I had really bought into this fairly hardcore feminist ideal that women can do whatever they want, yes, and that women that were doing this kind of work, sex work, whatever, if they were there by choice, like more power to them, who am I going to say? And that they could use their body to, if they wanted to use their body to make money and people were willing to pay and see it and they weren't being touched, like go for it. And what ended up happening during one of the shoots was I saw a look in a woman, in one of the women's eyes, that was the antithesis of an empowered, free spirit. It was like a 1/60th of a second, just snapshot. I got home, I processed the photos, and I could just see this like scared person in that little microsecond. And that really was the last time I did any photography. I was like, I'm out. I feel like I have been a tool to victimizing people, whether it's editing in Photoshop to make women look a different way than they are, you know, the fashion stuff. And then that, it was just like the veil was lifted, like, oh, I'm victimizing people and I'm part of the problem. And especially as a woman in it, I should be the one representing a different side of it. So, you know, it's not this incredible story where I go from being a Playboy photographer to instantly becoming this anti-porn activist. It's actually what kept me from becoming more of an activist and, you know, working in the sex abuse prevention was the fact that I worked at Playboy. It was this massive thing, like this weight that was holding me back. I knew I needed to go and speak out. And for the longest time, I didn't tell anybody, hoping they weren't going to dig into my past and find out that I had worked for Playboy. And I had kind of a, well, screw it kind of moment. I'm going to tell people I worked for Playboy. And it has been the best thing for getting the word out about the work that I do, because everybody wants to know that. And it's not being held against me, which is really interesting in work and life and culture, where you're, the one thing that you think is the worst thing about you ends up being what propels you into people actually listening to your story. So after I had my daughter, I just had a few moments where people were telling me stories of things that were happening in their family. One story was a girl was online and her quote unquote boyfriend that was her age, I think she was like in junior high, was going to meet up with her. Come to find out it was part of a sting and the cops called her parents, or the FBI or online safety called her her parents and said, your daughter's scheduled to meet up with a convicted pedophile and she needs to come to the vehicle, and like they need to actually meet up in order to confirm that there was actually a meetup for us to arrest him. Just things like that. Like that was holy cow, you know? Just story after story of people being abused within the religious community. I mean, now it's 82,000 boys. Now men were sexually abused in Boy Scouts. Just stuff just keeps coming up and coming up. And I was like, I got to do it. Here we go.
Okay.
I don't know if that answers the question.
Yes, it does. So let's talk a little bit about how the business has shaped your lifestyle today. But then I want to really dig into what's your work look like today. So if you want to tie that into that same question. So how has this affected your lifestyle today? And then what does a day in the life look like? Like what does your work really represent today? How are you doing that?
Well, one thing when I decided to move forward with this is I needed to be able to work remotely, which has worked out really well for me in 2020. And I needed to be able to work from anywhere. So my husband is, you know, the primary breadwinner. So and we move around quite a bit. So if we need to move, like I'm in New Orleans right now. 6 months ago, I was in Denver, you know, and before that we were in Texas. So I can't create something where I need to be in one location. So that was really important. And the second thing is, because my husband travels a lot, I need to be as flexible as I can. So with that, I developed an online curriculum. I have online courses. I do all the work that I do. I do one-on-one consulting with parents who run into some tricky situations. That's all done online. And I fly out occasionally to speak to large groups, which that's been, I did my last one last week in Georgia, which was nice to get on a stage with a mic. So my day in and day out is phone calls, you know, editing podcasts, you know, that kind of online activity. But it was crafted intentionally to where I could set it and forget it if need be.
Okay. So what does your work look like today? What are you doing to help with this, what I know is a growing problem in society?
So right now, the need has been, it's interesting because I work a lot with statistics and I do a lot of research because that's why people always want to know the impact or whatever. But most statistics are like 10 years behind. So it's what happens within every 6 months changes as to the needs that's going on. So right now what's really happening is kids are happening to stumble across pornography, or it's being shown to them, and they end up acting out what they saw on other kids. So now you have a family, a mixed family, or with a child who was sexually abused by another child. And as far as I'm concerned, the child that watched the pornography was sexually abused. And how do they move forward from there? So that's what I work with a lot. Or a child has seen pornography, you know, or is saying that they were sexually abused or something like that. And we work through how to handle that in the most ethical, safe way possible for everybody. So that's a lot of, that's my main MO. I'm creating a curriculum for kids. All my stuff is nature-based. So one of the major challenges that I had early on is it's really awkward for parents to deal with some of this stuff. So all of my lessons, everything that I teach, I've created conversations that branch from like watching a moth, you know, go into a light bulb, and or different lessons about things we can observe in nature, like a this is a really good example. I talk about predators. We use stalking, luring, and mimicking. And when you've got littles, you just point those three words out when you're talking about lions, or you want to get a treat that the dog wants and lure her into the house. See how the, I don't know, stingray is mimicking the gravel to hide, or it's pretending to be something it's not. So I kind of do these slow ramp conversations where we go, remember how we talked about predators, how they stalk, lure, and mimic? And then as the child develops and different situations develop, and maybe they're going over to somebody's house, you can kind of say, remember how we talked about predators, stalking, luring, and mimicking? You know, introduce them to that when they're dealing with people, and then when they get online. So I'm trying to integrate that into a child-based program right now.
Okay.
Long answer to the short question. I've had so much coffee.
That's okay. All right. So let's talk about, I'm going to sort of kind of go jump back and forth. You still are an entrepreneur. You still have your own business. It's in a very sort of serious capacity. But I want to also focus on the entrepreneurship side of this. And then we'll come back to some of the other questions here about what parents can do or what things they can see and to be aware, to create awareness.
Okay.
But let's talk about skill sets right now for just a minute. I want to jump. So what do you think that in your work are sort of two of your superpowers that have really helped you sort of develop your work and create the success that you have?
You know, it's a good question because for a long time, I really felt, because I am not a therapist, I'm not a psychologist, I felt very unqualified to do the work that I do. Mm-hmm. But I'm a researcher, and I take the data and I present it in a palatable way, which is very much from my photography, working with the ad agencies and getting something and getting it to become appealing to where people stay with it for a while, using art and imagery and changing the narrative around it is really what I'm good at. I have a degree in fine art and design. The other thing that's really helped me is I have a massive, massive bandwidth for hearing other people's trauma and not taking it on, which I didn't realize until I met therapists who actually had to go through therapy because of their secondary trauma after their first week working as a therapist. I have not that I'm comparing myself to a therapist, but it's just this massive bandwidth to hear story after story after story after story. And I think of it very analytically of how I can use it. And the other thing that's been very, very useful is I have absolutely no fear of public speaking. And I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing. My husband says, I'm really scared that you're not scared.
I have to tell you, I've never really been afraid of that either. I mean, I remember being nervous, and there's a difference in that. Like, I remember getting ready to go on stage in those early days and being just nervous, but I was never afraid to do it, like to the point where it paralyzed me of doing it. It's just something I always felt supernatural with.
Yeah.
Which is,
I think there must be something in your DNA, because people would literally eat light bulbs before they got on a stage. And, you know, that is the one thing that I was talking to a therapist the other day, which I meet with therapists regularly to talk about my content and how to be trauma informed. And they were like, you do what? No, never, never in a million years could I do that. I couldn't have a podcast. I couldn't create a course. Like I can't. And it made me realize, yes, I am the missing link between these people who are on the ground floor, like trying to heal this trauma and deal with the aftermath, is they need somebody out there trying to prevent it in the first place. So, it's kind of funny what you don't realize is your skill set until you're in there and you're like, oh, you guys can't do that? Okay. That's why this is working.
Right. That is a really good point. They're on the ground working so hard, and a lot of therapists that I know and counselors, they're not that real, you know, extrovert personality that can get on a stage and do that. But it's such important work that people need to hear it. And being that voice, I love that. That's amazing.
The other thing as well is a therapist has a very defined relationship with their patients or clients where they can't say, don't post pictures like this of your kids on Facebook. Don't do this. Don't do that. You know, do this, do that. They have more of a relationship of like, how does that feel for you? You know, where I don't have that therapy relationship with people. So I'm like, you can't have teenage boys babysitting your kids. Like you cannot let your kids be in the front. Your 13-year-old needs to put clothes on. You don't have to worry about them being ashamed of their body. Like it's just normal social rules. You know, I can say things that they can't. And they're mm-hmm. always like, oh yes, I need somebody like you to just blatantly say this because I don't feel like I can. So what I thought was going to hold me back is everything that is needed. It's really interesting how that ends up working out.
Let's talk a little bit on how you actually, what you're doing. I know some of the things that you talk about is you say you're a free range parent. What does that mean? We also about why do you think it's essential that kids learn to talk with strangers? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the things that you encounter and maybe some of the myths or things you just said or beliefs that people have or don't have that they should be more aware of. So why don't we dive in a little bit, especially in how parents can become more aware of just situations within, you know, in not only teaching their children, but in their own home that they should be aware of.
Yeah. So one of the biggest challenges right now is because there is this awareness of sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. What has happened is, and this has been building up for a while, where parents feel very uncomfortable letting their kids out of their sight. And now we all know that there's that stage where like they will literally die if you look away. You know, there are those moments, you know, for a period of time. And then they're like 7 years old and the parents are still not allowing them to play in the yard by themselves. You know, even as they get older, they're not allowed to go places on their own. And a lot of that is stemming from the fear of the sex trafficking. And there's a misunderstanding that kids are just being snagged up off of the street and sex trafficked. And really what's happening is kids are running away and there's hostility in the home. Usually the LGBT community, there's high statistics in this. The kid doesn't feel supported, leaves, is living on the streets, and they develop a romantic relationship with someone that progresses into trafficking. So a lot of times, you know, it's a lot more complicated than just nabbing somebody off the street. They psychologically convince somebody that they are needed and that they're in this together. If that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So it's when you're talking about free range parenting, that is letting kids go into the store. I mean, from my time my daughter was tiny, I'd send her into the restaurant to get us a table for the restaurant. Little things like that. Go into the store, go grab a gallon of milk and pay for it. And I'm going to be standing here. Little things that empower them. And everybody thinks that speaking to strangers is the worst thing ever. And it's not. It's not. Being able to talk to strangers and especially teaching your kids, you know, if you get lost, who to go to is extremely, extremely important. Kids are getting older. The suicide rates are like off the charts right now, especially with preteen girls. It's not working. It's like the sacrifice of all of childhood to prevent this one element. You see what I'm saying? And instead of the kids going outside, riding their bikes, skinning their knees, getting into a fist fight with their friend, making up, moving on, whatever, kissing behind a tree, whatever happens when you ride your bike around the neighborhood. Instead, they're left inside to be entertained with devices. And it is very, very frightening. It's very scary, the manipulation. I call it social grooming with kind of the onset of the pornification of our media right now. And mm-hmm. the kids are just soaking this stuff up. And mental health is declining. Kids are being exposed to pornography, which means they're being sexually abused in their own home. You know, they're watching violent media, mostly focused around violence towards women. And that's becoming, you know, being processed kind of in their, this is what normal life is, instead of riding their bikes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So being a free range parent just really means allowing your kids to get out, explore, be kids, let them get dirty. You know, maybe they fall out of a tree and break their arm, and that's, you know, that's the way it's going to be. And also supporting other parents who are doing the same thing. You know, okay. be mindful about calling the police because a kid's playing in the yard, or you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So what are some essential ways of teaching kids about in speaking with strangers, or and at what age is that?
You know, it depends, because the cognitive ability of kids is all over the place. But I think, I mean, a good example is, you know, when I was in Denver, we were at this park, and my daughter was a toddler, and there was somebody with a dog that was sitting there. And one of the parents was like, "Oh my gosh, they're talking to that person." And there's just kind of identifying, and this is pre-coronavirus, that's why I'm like imagining it now. It's just understanding that going up and speaking and asking, "Can I pet your dog?" and looking at somebody in the eye and various things like that is useful. And that not all people who are at a park are sexual predators and going to steal your kid. You know, I'm just like that, just kind of testing the grounds and empowering them as much as you can handle, and then push yourself a little bit too. You know, I get scared too, but I go, you know what, is this a real fear, or am I holding my daughter back from a human experience, or am I just wallowing in my own fear because I can't get off the internet?
Right. So let's talk about a challenge that you've had working in your business and how you overcame that.
So one of the biggest things is when I started becoming a lot more vocal about preventing kids from watching pornography and how damaging it is, and, you know, speaking out against pornography. I had no idea that I would have haters because of that. That one. Wow. That one floored me. And I learned how to deal with haters. I mean, I had a friend of mine who's very controversial, and I said, "How do you deal with this?" And he said, I debate my equals and everyone else I educate. And I was like, "Oh." And he said, don't debate people who are not your equals. Just okay. Don't go there. Don't even respond. Because that is the strongest thing you can do, is just ignore somebody. If you want to make somebody mad, just don't respond in a good way, because it gives them no fuel. And then the other thing, gosh, what was the other line that he said to me that just, responding to an argument validates it. And I was like,
yeah, that's powerful.
It's powerful, because, you know, I would get comments and I thought, what, you know, what on earth? And I'm like ready to go to battle, and you're never going to win. There is no winning on this. And so I just ignored it, and it was such a relief, because I just didn't know. I was like, I just don't know how to do this. This is my job to fight back on this. And social media is not the place to do that battle. So that
was absolutely,
that was one of the biggest things. And I also, so there's sex educators that teach sex education in schools that view children watching pornography as a safe way for them to explore their sexuality, which is the antithesis of my beliefs completely. I feel like it's dangerous. I think it projects kids and people of all ages into a preference of sexuality that's not authentic to who they truly are. And it's, I didn't know that before going into this, that there are people in the public school system teaching kids that it's normal to watch pornography. And I'm like, okay, does that mean you're not normal if you don't watch pornography?
Wow.
You know, that's a slippery slope, to say the least. You know, it's just because everybody's doing it doesn't mean it's normal or healthy. And just because they're not having sex doesn't mean that's the right thing for humans. You know, it's very, they're like, oh, wait, they're not getting STDs. They're not getting pregnant. And I'm like, yeah, but they're, you know, eroticizing violence against women, and women are being raped, and then they're going to school and they're being taught consent and all this. But meanwhile, they've got this really powerful message that consent is unsexy, you know? So there's, mm-hmm. yeah, that was just the one thing, you know, there's just stuff that throws you off. You're like, what? Oh, people want kids to watch pornography. Didn't see that one coming. See that one coming.
And that there would be so many haters against you speaking out against it. But I guess it's just another one of those things about big business. You know what I mean? And people are a lot more involved in that than what you realize.
Yeah. People love their pornography.
Wow.
They love it. I know. And it's bizarre to me that someone would even fight back. Yeah, I don't, there's a whole question mark stamped into my brain over that one, but that's okay. That's why I don't acknowledge arguments, because right. I don't want to validate
them. It just doesn't really, it just doesn't create a picture of a healthy relationship. And so no matter at what age that you are, you get these ideas about what a healthy relationship looks like with another individual. And it just doesn't really promote a healthy relationship.
Well, there's that. And then also, last night I was watching The Social Dilemma. I don't know if you've seen it.
I have.
I think it's a must watch for explanation of what's going on in 2020. It's just kind of laid it out to me. And when they were talking about people's perception and changing their behavior as being the commodity for social, for all things online, that's really, I couldn't verbalize it before, but I was like, that's what pornography is doing, is they are changing your behavior and your perception of the world. And part of that is it's this mix between eroticism and natural, normal, erotic, whatever, mixing it with violent violence. And they're glomming those two together. And when they do that, there's literally no place you can get that legally, except for pornography. And one thing that very few people know is pretty much all of pornography online is owned by one group. It's and the free, that's what they're doing with free pornography. Because I'm like, why can't we just pay for it? Why can't you just put in a credit card that eliminates children from being exposed to it?
Mm-hmm.
But even young kids, I think it's 20% of the under 18 viewers are under 10 years old, if that makes any sense. So there are kids, there's 20% of the people under the age of 18 are kids under the age of 10 that are consuming pornography.
Wow.
Yes. These are devices in the bedroom. These are parents saying, I get this all the time, but my kid's a good kid. Oh my gosh. If I got a penny for every time I heard that, my kid's a good kid, they follow the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't about that. This is about a group making copious amounts of Pornhub, making copious amounts of money just for their eyes, for that time and for their eyes to be watching it and the addictiveness of it. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I know. There's so much that when we talk about this, I have all these like neurons that fire in my brain and go to 100 million different places.
Sure. So then this is kind of a crazy question, but it's our signature question of the show. And I'm sure you've got some insight on this, but what does working from your happy place mean to you?
Oh, so this is interesting because there is, we were kind of talking about secondary trauma before, I learned very early on how to choose people I worked with one-on-one. And I took on a client that her daughter was in class with my daughter. We had just met somewhere and we were talking. She's like, "What do you do?" And I realized after this was like a one step off a 100-foot cliff where I was like, holy cow, I am way, way out of my pay grade here. Like, I am, stay in your lane, Emily. I learned very quickly, I have a hard time dealing with people who have little girls my daughter's age. So I have to screen through, and if I feel like something might be triggering, because I take it on in, you know, stress in my body, and I can't do this with people I know. She suspected her ex-husband, who was also picking the daughter up. I was seeing both of them regularly throughout the week, not as clients, but during drop-off at school. And she was telling me about all this abuse, and I was like, if you don't report it, I think I should. And it blew up. The whole situation blew up. So it was just learning very quickly, very early on, how to pick who I work with is very, very important. And I stay in my lane. I know my skill set. I challenge myself, but I'm not a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And I remind myself on a regular basis, I call it my tool belt of people to refer people out to. So that's been a lifesaver for me, is knowing how, they call it staying in the green zone. When you're working with trauma, people have their bandwidth, and understanding what your bandwidth is helps you keep helping other people if you don't respect it. You know, if you push it, then you're useless to other people. You're not helping the situation at all. So just really clarifying what my limits were makes this work great. And I do a lot of creative work. I love creating images and the graphic design and doing the art part of what I do. And I integrate that into everything I possibly can.
I think that's a really great point that you made up. And it's one that I've always kind of taught to other people too, because when you are even sometimes, say, a leader within a sales team, or you're in a sort of leadership position at work, and people will come to you with some personal problems or situations, and you have a tendency to want to help them or give advice. And at the end of the day, you're not really a therapist. So I've always really encouraged, especially I teach a lot in the area of sales leaders, it's like, have an arsenal of books on all kinds of subjects. Like, really, I read all of the time, but I've just got a whole library of books on different subjects. And if somebody is like, I'm having this issue, or my husband and I, blah, 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 I'm like, you know what is a really great book on repairing relationships is blah, blah, blah. And yeah. I'm able to give those references, or, you know, raising your children, or empowering girls, or raising, you know, boys that are whatever. I mean, I've got like everything under the sun. I do, because I've been in that position, and people do come to you with that. And I've learned to not say that my opinion doesn't really matter that much. Or I will say, well, here's what I experienced. But a really great resource on that is XYZ, so that I'm not giving them advice like, you told me I should do this, or you're the one that really encouraged me to do whatever. And so I've always tried to educate people in that way of just, you know, if you're in a position, a leadership position of some kind, where you might be in a position like that, it's like, have good resources at your fingertips.
I love having a library of reference, because that's brilliant, actually. And it's a time saver too, right? Just be like, hey, you know what? I got to go, but here's this great book. I think it'll work out for you.
100%. It also avoids that a lot of times, of getting into a really deep conversation, because not that you don't want to, but sometimes it's not, you don't have the time and it's not most appropriate. But if you are empowering somebody to take it upon themselves to educate themselves, then that's a whole different ballgame.
And you know what's interesting about this too, talking about sales, that's another one of my, I used to sell ads for magazines, and I've convinced, like, I looking back in my history, I've been in sales because I was selling my photography, selling my services. Mm-hmm. And when you look at what I do now, I'm doing the same thing. I'm selling people on a behavior change. I'm trying to convince them. I absolutely love sales. There's so much in that. But people don't realize that that's also what I'm doing as well. I have to sell people on the fact that I'm going to be a great speaker and that, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to be able to come into the school. And then with the online sales, there's a lot of complexity around that too. You really have to have sales. Sales is just should be a must at school.
I agree. And I teach on that a lot too, because a lot of, especially women, get negative feelings or vibes about being in sales. Oh, I don't want to be like a used car salesman. I hear that. I can't even tell you how many times I hear that. I'm like, yeah. You'd have to go out of your way hardcore before you're doing that. Like, it would take a lot. But I always say, you know what? Every single person is in sales of some kind, because you are either selling yourself, you're selling your service, or mm-hmm. you're selling a product, or you're selling an idea. And so at the end of the day, we're always selling. And so just learning some basic skill sets on that is, I think, always wonderful and not something to be afraid of.
Yeah. So for example, we were talking about talking to strangers. So my daughter and I made these little Halloween mummies. They were, you know, just about 6 inches tall, and they had wires in them, super cute. And I made my daughter come with me door to door to knock and sell, because she wanted money. And I'm like, I'm not just giving you money. When she was little, if she wanted money, I'd send her over to the neighbor's house and negotiate on the price of cleaning their glass door, like the bottom plane of their glass door. So I'd send her over and I'd tell my neighbors, here she comes, make her haggle with you on a good price. So if you know, do authentically, if she realized that 10 cents wasn't worth it, then that's a lesson learned, whatever. But we went door to door and sold her mummies.
Oh, that's awesome.
And she would get shy, and it's weird. It's hard to sell door to door. So, you know, I would show her how to do it and make these people our best friends, and then they feel obligated. And and especially as a little kid, like, what are you going to buy with it? I'm saving for college. She's really
absolutely.
Playing.
I mean, it's so fun. I just really liked sales even as a kid. And so my girlfriend was in Girl Scouts, and so every year it would be the big Girl Scout, you know, cookie sale. And she was always kind of afraid or timid or shy. And I'd be like, "Come on, girl, we are gonna win this thing."
Yeah, you're like, "Don't hold back.
We're gonna sell the most cookies." And I don't know. I loved the whole experience of it. Knocking on the door, "Hi, you know, do you want to buy some Girl Scout cookies?" It was just exhilarating to me, and so fearful for her. But I think she learned some things out of that, and I certainly learned some things out of that. But and then today, you're right. We wouldn't even let our kids go door to door knocking on a door.
I know. So. I know. Well, that's another thing I want to talk about. So Halloween, you know, there's this fear of like drugs being put into candy. So this is like one of the classic myths, urban legends. So mm-hmm. that specific story came from a little boy whose uncle was living in the house. He hid his heroin or whatever hard class A, probably legal in Oregon, drug in the candy. The boy took it and ended up overdosing. There's these other stories about that, who all of them, it's been from their family. Something happened in the family.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this kind of joke in the free range community that it's safer to take candy from strangers than it is your family.
Okay.
So it's like where these stories come from. Right. You've got to dig in, and then you're like, oh, the razor blades and stuff. And you know, all that kind of stuff is all urban legend. That stuff just didn't happen.
Wow. So what advice would you give to others wanting to go down this entrepreneurial path or completely switch careers, as in your case?
You know, I think one of the best things you can do is find your overlap. First of all, I went through a period of time of not knowing what I was going to do. And I read like, what color is your parachute? And I got nothing out of it except for one thing, is to look at the type of people you will be working with. I love gems. I love minerals. I love mineralogy. And then I realized I'm going to be selling engagement rings, probably. Yeah, no, that's not appealing to me at all. So I think looking at the group of people, the population that you want to work with is first and foremost, because you can have a great job and work with horrible people and you're going to have a horrible job. And then also finding where there's a good overlap in your skill set that will translate, so it makes a little bit of sense when you're talking about it in regards to your resume and whatnot. And then also just don't be afraid to just create whatever the hell you want. You know, if mm-hmm. there isn't something out there that fits exactly what you want to do or fills a need, there's so much opportunity right now. Don't let the fact that you have kids or you move a lot, just figure out how to make your lifestyle work with the business model, you know, that fits your skill set mm-hmm. and your passion.
Right. That's great advice. So in closing, what are some new and exciting things that you're working on that you think our listeners can benefit from? And then also, how can our listeners find you?
One of the coolest things that I have going right now is I have a Young, Wild, and Safe course. And that is a sexual abuse prevention course for parents and all caring adults who take care of kids. And it uses a lot of my nature-based analogies. And all of it's from interviewing therapists, pediatric forensic nurse examiners, even survivors and convicted offenders to put this together as to exactly what you need without freaking out and being a helicopter parent. So that's Young, Wild, and Safe. And that is on my website, howtoraisemaverick.com. And if you're welcome to email me if you have any burning questions. I really appreciate random questions. Don't feel like you're bothering me, because it helps me get a feel on what's going on in people's homes right now, especially during mm-hmm. COVID. It's Emily@howtoraisemaverick.com.
Perfect. Well, Emily, this has been absolutely a wonderful interview and very enlightening. So I thank you for that. And thank you for the work that you're doing. It's much appreciated if we can keep our kids safe and teach good, healthy attitudes about themselves as they move into adulthood. I think that that is super important. So thank you for all of that. Thank you for being our guest today.
Thanks for letting me be here and sharing the word.
Yes, absolutely. And to all of our listeners, thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our show so you don't miss a single episode. And we love ratings and reviews more than anything else, because that really helps us to grow as well as a podcast. So thanks so much, everyone. Until next time, continue to work from your happy place.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.